Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Tapson. Thanks so much for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Just a week or so ago, we passed Memorial Day, and then about a week after that, the 80th anniversary of the Allied invasion of Europe on D-Day. And then this upcoming week, on June 14th, to be precise, is the birth date of the United States Army, which was founded in 1775. So I think it's fitting that we talk this episode about our nation's military. My guest today at The Right Take is someone whose take on today's military you will definitely want to hear, and I'll get to him in a moment. But let me just say first that the state of our military and of our national security is an issue that we're deeply concerned about here at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. And we've written about it quite a bit. In fact, we have a whole section devoted to our military commentary at our flagship website, frontpagemag.com. You can go there and scroll down just a little bit, and over to the right, you will see a link called Disloyal Military. And if you click on that, it will take you to a whole slew of articles about what the progressive subversives in the Biden administration are doing to undermine what used to be the greatest fighting force in the world. I say used to be, not as any disrespect to our soldiers, far from it, but let me just make note of the fact that in the Heritage Foundation's 2024 report called The Index of U.S. Military Strength, it states that, quote, as currently postured, the U.S. military is at significant risk of not being able to defend America's vital national interests, unquote. And that is for the second year in a row. So over the last 2 years, our military is rated too weak to defend our vital national interests. That worries us deeply at the Freedom Center, and I know it does you, and I think that you know what accounts for that decline. Woke leadership, diversity and equity requirements, lowered fitness standards, plunging recruitment numbers, an obsession with rooting out conservatives and Trump supporters as potential extremists, the demonization of white soldiers, the prioritization of ideology over military readiness, the embrace of gender madness, including the celebration of drag queen lunacy. All of this stems from the woke capture of our entire military by domestic enemies. My upcoming guest has written a very timely book addressing the whole woke undermining of our military, so I've been very eager to have him on the show to discuss it. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this conversation. And yes, I know I say that about all my guests, but if I didn't mean it, I wouldn't say it. And let me say, as always, please take a moment to subscribe to The Right Take, if you haven't already, so you can keep up with the conversations we're having here with important thinkers, writers, pundits, scholars, and storytellers. And if you like what you hear, a positive review would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at The Right Take is the very well-known co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. He's hosted multiple Fox Nation documentaries. He's a graduate of both Princeton and Harvard and a highly decorated Army veteran of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay. He's the best-selling author of books like American Crusade and Battle for the American Mind, and now his latest, The War on Warriors, Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free, which we are going to talk about today. Pete Hegseth, thanks for your service, sir, and welcome to the Right Take Podcast.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate what you guys fight for as well.
I'm so glad you could make the time to come on. Pete, we have just passed Memorial Day and the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We're coming up on the 249th birthday of the United States Army. You're a veteran. Let me begin by asking you a couple of big questions. What does Memorial Day mean to you, and how significant would you say the role of the U.S. military has been to the history of American exceptionalism?
Oh, it's a great question. The military has been at the tip of the spear of the American experiment. We are not here without the military. I mean, the United States Army is older than the country. I have 1775 tattooed on my arm because that's when the shooting started. You can declare anything whenever you want. We can declare independence from England. They weren't going to give it to us. We had to take it. And it was taken at the end of a musket. And that reality still exists today in the world we live in today. And So I mean, that's why this book and this topic is so important, is that we still live in history. We can't rest on our laurels. You can't just celebrate the D-Day vets and say they were the greatest generation. We need to live worthy of that legacy so that 80 years from now, our great-grandchildren look back and said, man, they held the line. And so I live free and I need to hold the line. Like, that's the kind of view that we have. And we're getting really complacent with the basics. And that's when you get in serious trouble. Memorial Day is central to the preservation of the American ethos, of the recognition of the, it sounds cliche, but it's true because I've seen it, the cost of freedom. And, you know, it was Memorial Day parades that inspired me to serve. That's why I make sure every Memorial Day, every 4th of July, everything, that I find a civic ritual to take my kids to, in addition to what we do in our own home and their schools and everything. Because I remember watching the Memorial, little blink and you miss it, Memorial Day parade in my parents' small farming town in southern Minnesota. It was like the sheriff, the high school band, the one fire truck, and the vets, you know. But that whole town came out and applauded these men. And I just remember thinking, man, they did something special. Like, they protected us. And then, of course, it ended at Memorial Park because it wasn't about the vets. It was about the guys that are not there. So anytime you can take your kids to a national cemetery or where they can visually get a sense of the scope, and they start to wrap their brain around the amount of people that are in the ground, but we're willing to do that for them, It rattles the cage and I think puts things in perspective. So it's immensely important that we recognize and remember, because hopefully that leads to active investment in fighting for the future for our kids and grandkids.
Do you find it curious, or maybe revealing is a better word, that Congresswomen Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush both shared social media posts on Memorial Day that apparently confused it with Veterans Day? And not only that, but Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib couldn't be bothered, as far as I could tell, to post anything on Twitter about Memorial Day. What does that say to you about them and maybe about the Democrat Party leadership more generally?
Well, it tells me everything. I mean, we already know who these people are. I mean, they're anti-American Marxists. They're pro-Hamas. They're the Hamas caucus. Like, they've decided that America and the West are evil. That reparations ought be paid, that this is all stolen land built by, you know, by white racists who you know, have been wrecking the world for 250. I mean, we know their view of the world. So, of course, the amount of willful ignorance you have to engage in to not understand, especially if you've traveled the globe, what is special and exceptional about America. You just have to be intellectually dishonest or just completely ignorant of the way most people live in the world and most people have lived in human history. I mean, the height of the self-intoxicating hubris of the left, of that crew, is them talking about or their followers chanting, you know, lesbians for Gaza, you know, when if you dare be a lesbian in Gaza, you're dead. Like, there's just no intellectual, there's no synapses connecting at all between their logic. So no, they don't, of course, Cori Bush doesn't know the difference between Memorial Day or Veterans Day. You know why? Because she's probably never celebrated them. And that's a sad commentary on, you know, our schools, on our culture, on our civics, and they're products of institutions that never celebrated those things. And so why would they celebrate those things? And then they're in Congress and they'll put out a perfunctory tweet or something, but then it turns out to be wrong because they never really understood it. And by the way, I remember the first time I confused the two. I don't know, I was in high school or something, and someone quickly corrected me about the difference of it. And then once you see that difference, you understand the gravity of that difference. And it becomes something you want to make sure your kids understand too. That just never happened. And so we end up battling our own who don't know or care that much about the military. And as it pertains to my book, what you have is someone in Barack Obama who very much sees the world the same way the squad does. And he was in charge of the Pentagon for 8 years. So what kind of people do you think he was placing in positions of power inside that Pentagon, which he inherently distrusted, which he saw as a meritocracy that needed to come to heel? And so that was the beginning of a lot of the changes.
Okay, well, your newest book is The War on Warriors, and you've written a lot about our nation's military, but what is the specific angle of this book?
Oh, man. The specific angle of this book is it's not just a book about how the military went woke, although there's a lot in there about that. It's more a book about how the military allowed itself to go woke. Because you see, everyone in the military swears an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and takes very seriously their, or should, their role as defenders of standards and accountability and integrity and meritocracy and, you know, lethality and all the things you associate traditionally with the military. But starting mostly under Obama, there were some seeds of it, you know, Clinton and elsewhere, but mostly under Obama, there were ideologies pushed in by civilians at the top that our brass needed to fight back against, and it didn't. And then it didn't again, and then it was complicit again. And pretty soon you get these seeds of these insidious theories like critical race theory, like CRT, like genderism, trans stuff that germinate. And, you know, Trump did what he could. There were a lot of fires that Trump was fighting, and there wasn't as much of a sense of how bad what Obama had done. And so they kind of went underground. And then when Biden came in, it's been on hyperspeed. And so it really is a book detailing what the military should look like, you know, for civilians out there. That's where I relay a lot of my combat stories of like, hey, what's this brotherhood about? Why do I care about this so much? Well, because I've been in combat situations where variables and distractions get people killed. And if you don't have standards and you don't maintain them, you get people killed. And then laying out how those standards have been eroded. And I spent months talking to dozens and dozens of actively serving service members who spoke to me on the condition of, you know, off the record, just to make sure I had my finger on the pulse and I wasn't wrong across all ranks and services. And yeah, all of them talked about walking on eggshells or lack of accountability or standards lowering in the name of inclusion and women in a lot of it comes back to women in combat is where it really started. If we want to unpack it, but it lays bare kind of the dirty laundry of what's happened in our military. And at the end kind of explains what we need to do to get out of it. But also I end it with a letter to my five sons and where I kind of lay out whether I want them to serve, because if you talk to any vet today, the top of their mind is, would I recommend my kids serving? And most in the past would have said, not just yes, but hell yes. Okay. Now they're not just saying no, they're saying hell no. And that's really bad for an institution that mostly is predicated on service being a family tradition. And if you break a link in that chain, you think the recruiting numbers are bad. Now just wait until that really comes to bear. And so I kind of explain why, at least at this moment, I still think the Hegseth boys should be willing to serve. But I reserve the right to change my mind if we have a different commander in chief and it continues to go sideways. You know, Donald Trump hopefully gets a chance to really clean house and turn things around, but it's not automatic. So it is part polemic, part personal stories. I talk about how I was targeted, how I was deemed an extremist by my last unit, and which led to me getting out. And you hear the whole story about that, which I haven't told before this book came out. So it's a really personal book to me, but it's not written about me. It's written for other warriors and patriots who are concerned about the trajectory of our nation.
Yeah, I love that you write that America's military has been fighting in recent years on two fronts, one of them domestic. And I love this quote from the book, quote, "A domestic political cult of virtue signaling social justice saboteurs has targeted our military as the next trophy in their reckless big game hunting of American traditions. This time they're going straight for our immune system," unquote. I think that's very well said. In fact, let's pretend that I wrote that. Pete, there's a progressive slogan. There's a progressive slogan that has acquired the status of unquestioned dogma that we hear all the time. So let me ask you what you think about it. From a military perspective, is diversity our greatest strength?
Well, you've clearly taken a look at the book, and I appreciate that. That is the biggest load of crap. And every time I hear a military leader say that, I mean, that's the best PG word I could use. Every time I hear a military leader say that, I throw up in my mouth a little bit more, because if they believe it, it shows you how sideways and how indoctrinated they are. And if they don't, and they're just willing to say it, then they're just the cowards that we think they are. It is the exact opposite, like precisely the opposite. The diversity is not our greatest strength. Unity is our greatest strength. It's the forcing function of the military, which takes young boys and young girls, pulls them in, strips them down, literally and figuratively in basic training, and reminds them of, you know, their weaknesses, but, you know, strengthens them and fortifies them and forges them, pumps them out of basic training into units where we all wear the same uniforms and the bad haircuts, because it's not about us anymore. It's about we. And, you know, you go to basic training and some kid from Kentucky meets some guy from Seattle who bunks with a black guy from Boston or a white guy in Texas. And you didn't have anything in common until you came to this unit. And then you had everything in common because you've got a shared goal and a mission, and distinctions don't matter. I mean, everything you do is meant to say you're a cog in this machine, willing to die for everyone next to you in service of defending the nation and accomplishing the mission. Like, that is unity by definition. And when you let our differences, diversity, come into the ranks, all you're doing is dividing and segregating people. You're undoing what the military always does. And as a result, creating fractures and fissions and questions and eggshells to walk on for commanders that make everyone's job more difficult. So that, Donald Trump, when he comes in, should just, wherever that phrase is found inside the Defense Department, it should be crossed out and just say, no, unity is our greatest strength. Because this whole idea that, you know, I mean, I could go on and on, because the book dives into this, attacks this issue very directly, because I think it's the most insidious one, this idea of extremism and racism that's rampant in the ranks. The military leaders that peddled that nonsense knew it wasn't true, because they've been serving in this military and they know the military isn't racist, and it hasn't been for a very long time. So when they actually did the study, shocker, they found out that the military has a 0.007 extremism rate. Whereas the general population has a 7% rate. I mean, I don't trust any of those numbers, but it shows you the difference. And because it's been doing its job for all these years, unifying Americans. And yet they jumped at the George Floyd boogeyman of systemic racism to genuflect to their political leaders and so they could go to their cocktail parties in Arlington and everything's hunky-dory. Yet it's the troops that are now looking at each other saying, what in the world is going on? So I thank you for bringing up that phrase. As you can tell, it gets my ire up. And it's emblematic of how off chart our military is.
Pete, when you have a military leadership and an administration that consider patriotism a potential form of extremism and an existential threat, what does that say about their priorities and agenda?
It tells me that they've chosen a side. It tells me that the institute, I mean, I didn't grow up in a political family with, we didn't really talk politics around the table. It was a Christian, hardworking, patriotic family. That's it. Like most people, you know, grew up, and eventually you learn about politics and all that, but I wouldn't even have known necessarily whether I was a Republican and Democrat before I went to college. So when I'm signing up to join the military in ROTC, I'm not doing it because I want to serve George Bush or not Bill Clinton or whatever. I love the nation. I think I'm capable. Let's do this. And then I serve under Bush and under Obama. I was no fan of Obama's, but I volunteered to be a part of his surge in Afghanistan. And then under Trump, and I wanted to serve under Biden. I was still in at that point. And that's where the story of what happened to me is in the book. But what happened after 2020, especially after the election and leading into Biden's inauguration, was the weaponization of a lot of agencies, right? The FBI and everything else, but inside the DOD to target effectively political opponents of the incoming regime by creating a new category of extremism, which you alluded to, which is patriot extremism. And we've got the evidence. It's a thing inside the Pentagon that they of course they didn't find many patriot extremists, but they're the way they train and teach extremism training, the way they teach CRT and DEI, the way they teach all the gender stuff is so one-sided that it's clear that if you have traditional values in today's military, you're not of the current strand of our way of thinking. And that's why a lot of those guys and gals have been shown the door or have found their way to the door, or the vaccine mandates gave them another reason to walk out the door. And that's part of how you bring an institution to heal, is you push the independent thinkers, the traditional thinkers out of that institution, then pump it full of wokesters and you take it over. And that's the scary part of where we are right now. That's another reason why I'm recommending that my kids serve, because we only have one military. We only have one. If patriots don't join it, there aren't enough lesbians in San Francisco to staff the 82nd Airborne. Like you need the boys in Kentucky and Texas and North Carolina and Wisconsin, you know, like that's who it's. And I say boys because the vast majority of the folks that have served and died for it was all boys on the beaches of Normandy. Now there've been lots of wonderful women that have contributed to the country at home and in uniform. I'm not disparaging that, but let's cut with the politically correct crap and just acknowledge who the core constituency is for our military. It's strong, normal men. And we're always going to need strong, normal men. And the military has pulled a Bud Light and decided to advertise to non-traditional constituencies. And in the process, they've turned off strong, normal men. And that's a real big problem.
Yeah, and speaking of men, you have a chapter in the book called Men Need Purpose, Not Inclusion. Now, I personally have written a lot about the topic of masculinity, so I appreciated this chapter. And I wanted to ask you, how does the military, you've kind of touched on this already, but how does the military forge men? And what kind of men does a woke military forge?
That's another core. What a great question. It's a core question of the book. The military takes ordinary men and teaches them, trains them to have the ability alongside other ordinary men to do extraordinary things that you would not, your body, your mind, your psyche would normally never allow you to do. The military's job is to channel masculinity into purpose. And that's what it's done for so long. The military takes ordinary men and forges them to do extraordinary things alongside other ordinary men. And none of those ordinary men would be capable of doing those extraordinary things without the training and the ethos and the order and the discipline that goes into military service. You're forged to do things completely against your survival instincts, against what you would otherwise, you would never rationally do. But together as a unit, through that training and your masculinity and your toughness, you come out the other side prepared to risk your life for your nation, channeling that masculinity in really important ways. When you're recruiting in that context, you want the guys that are already masculine and, you know, alpha types, played football. And I share an example of a couple of those guys I went to high school with, and one went on to get a Silver Star. Another one was in the Marine Corps. Just great guys. The Army recruited them and channeled them the way you would want it to. And then you got like the patriotic kind of tepid guys who, you know, they're not really military types, but then once you get them into basic and you train them and you teach them, suddenly their 20-year career, awesome jump master, what a couple of other examples of guys from my hometown. And I kind of fit into the middle of those two groups. Like I'm your target demo of, man, I can do more with who I am for my country. What a woke military does is A, it doesn't recruit that first group of masculine men who say, well, if I want to, you know, get woke crap jammed down my throat, I might as well go to the local college here. And it certainly doesn't recruit the patriotic Christian sort of normal types who wouldn't otherwise, because it runs against their values. And then those that it does recruit, it doesn't reinforce those, the best masculine instincts. And now you get second guessing, and now you get questions, and now you get, well, I'm different and you're different. Or, well, I know you want me to take that hill, but I'm not sure I want to do that. Or, do we have a proper proportion of representation in our unit of socioeconomic male, female, and black, white breakdown? Because And the one thing I can assure you is the enemy's bullets don't care what your skin color is. And a woke military will find out very quickly that the breakdown of unit cohesion, good order and discipline, when that breaks down in peace, then it doesn't function in a war. You don't immediately then rediscover it and reverse engineer it. Those who long for peace must prepare for war. That was my company. That was my platoon motto when I was in Guantanamo Bay. Man, I haven't said that. I didn't even include that in the book. I haven't thought of that in a long time. You have to have that mindset. So a woke military destroys it and undermines it. And I'm not saying we're completely there yet. Like, there are a lot of mid-level leaders, a lot of NCOs, you know, mid-level officers that know this stuff is garbage and would be really reinvigorated by new leadership. So there is hope, but you can't let another life cycle go through and lose everybody.
You mentioned before that you closed this book with a letter to your sons. I found that very powerful. You have five boys, but you have girls too. Seven kids altogether, and I have only five, so you're ahead of me. And mine are all daughters, except the youngest one. And I could envision this letter being written for my son as well. But I have to say, and we've already talked about this a little, that if my son were military age, under the current circumstances, I'd find it very difficult to encourage him to enlist. I think, as you mentioned, a lot of people probably feel that way right now. Are you optimistic that we can sort of purge the military of this woke element, that we can return it to the kind of military where people would say, hell yeah, about enlisting in the military? Are you optimistic we can do that?
I believe we can do it. Am I optimistic? I don't know. If Joe Biden somehow snuck into the White House for a second term, absolutely not. I'm not optimistic. When Trump wins, then I am, because I know he's committed to cleaning house of, you know, woke leaders. You got to have a new Secretary of Defense, a new Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, clear out all of the Joint Chiefs, frankly, and then a few more targeted firings. You got to outlaw. I mean, it's an executive branch function. So getting rid of CRT and DEI and all those advisors inside the Pentagon, see ya, gone, pack your bags, change the curriculum at West Point, take the standards, whatever they were in like 1995 for every military school out there, and say, there's your standard, adhere to it. I mean, it's not, I know that implementing all that becomes that much more difficult, but when I wrote, because you know what the media will say, they'll say, oh, mega purge of the Pentagon, blah, blah. It has nothing to do with political alliances. Just pay attention to the standards and stick to it. But I respect your opinion greatly about what you would recommend to your son. And that's what I hear from almost all of my vet buddies are no way. And that's why I didn't write the letter to my sons until I was done with the entire book, because to be honest, Mark, I didn't know what I was going to recommend. And I mean that. But after writing it, really deep diving into it, you realize like, this is the only military we've got. And, you know, if not the Hegseth boys, then who's it going to be? Like, who is going to stand up and defend the nation? And are we really just going to fill the ranks with wokesters or lower the standards more and more and more? So we're, you know, outsourcing our defense to you take your pick. And so I recommend that they serve. I recommend that they try to find the most elite units possible to get into, that they strive for that, because I think a lot of the woke garbage is filtered out as you get closer and closer to the tip of the spear. But I reserve the right 4 years from now, when my oldest is 18, to kind of say, hey, you know, I know that letter, I wrote it and I meant it, but this is military's gotten even worse, and I don't think you should. And that if we reach that point, we're in a dangerous spot. Because if I'm saying it, and all my buddies are saying it, and everyone else is serving is saying it, you've lost the core of who serves in your military, and now you're just reducing the size of your force out of necessity. Because or politicians get desperate and they start talking about things like drafts, which is, you know, don't put that beyond Washington. To say, hey, you don't want to serve anymore, we're going to make you serve. And that's a dangerous place too.
There's a whole lot more that could be said about your book. But I do want to move on to another topic that I know is important to you. It's important to us here at the Freedom Center also. And that is the topic of education and indoctrination. You did a Fox Nation series, excuse me, on education. What do we need to do in the educational arena to reverse the damage that's been done over the last half century by leftist ideologues? Where do we begin this process of imparting a true education to younger generations?
It's a great question. First thing you do when your house is on fire is not like call 911 and hope someone arrives. Like, you grab your wife and your kids and you get out, right? And our educational house is on fire, and we can't be talking about educational reforms as the solution. The first thing you need to solve is what's going into your kids and your grandkids' heads. So whereas in this book, The War on Warriors, I argue for a frontal assault, take on the DoD, fix it and overhaul it. For K through 12 education, it's been so taken over by leftist forces top to bottom that I call for a tactical retreat. Like, get your leave the government schools, leave public school. I don't care if you think it's a good public school, it's a nice neighborhood, you move to it. It's a top-down system where some level of indoctrination has made it into your classroom, and find, whether it's homeschooling or classical Christian schooling or other forms of classical schooling, find a way to give your kids a real free thinking education, because that's the only way we start to rebuild the ruins of our education system, not by hoping we can tinker inside these government schools that are totally run by, communist teachers unions, and with curriculum basically written by Howard Zinn, and hope that we're going to win that battle. We're not. So it's hugely important, and it's very tied in with the Defense Department and the recruiting issue. I mean, we're in uncharted territory. How do you keep a country while simultaneously telling the young people of that country that the country sucks? Like, you can't do that. And why would they want to serve in the military in that context? So it's critically important, but serve your kids and your family first, because that has a generational blessing attached to it, where they're able and where their eyes are opened and they're able to impart wisdom and real knowledge to their own kids. And that grows, and hopefully the weight of the failures of the public education system collapse eventually under the weight of their own hubris and failure, especially as more states pass school choice options and more families are able to take their dollars where they want. So yeah, you gotta do it. You gotta be aware of what's happening, how deep the indoctrination is, and do something.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. I'm a homeschooling dad myself. Pete, besides watching Fox and Friends Weekend, where's the best place for people to go to keep up with what you're doing?
Thank you for the plug. Fox and Friends Weekend, Saturday, Sunday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. We got a fun little show. Otherwise, Fox Nation's a great place. I've got a couple series on this book, The War on Warriors. I have a series called, you referred to it, The Miseducation of America. I've got a Battle in the Holy Land about Israel and the life of Jesus, and some history series. And it's just a place where I can kind of expand on topics that are most interesting to me. And then, yeah, if folks are inclined, I'd love for them to check out The War on Warriors anywhere books are sold, or you can get a signed or personalized copy at waronwarriors.com. I just appreciate all the support and you having me on as well.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Good to know. Pete Hegseth, thanks so much for coming on The Right Take. Please keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mark.
Listeners, I highly recommend Pete Hegseth's new book, The War on Warriors. I've read it and give it 2 big thumbs up. And of course, don't miss him on Fox and Friends Weekend Edition. And thank you for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so you can keep up with all the important conversations we are having here. And again, if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you. The Right Take with Mark Tapson is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Front Page Magazine. Unauthorized reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.